Hello, everyone. Welcome back for the final installment in our podcast series on the rare genetic disease known as osteopetrosis. So far, we've talked about the disease in terms of rarity, severity, manifestation of symptoms, and inheritance patterns. From a quick glance, osteopetrosis is a disorder of the bones. However, as we've shown in the past episodes, it affects so many more parts of the body than just the bone. So far, we've talked about the effects autosomal dominant osteopetrosis has on the bones, nerves, and immune system. We've also covered the many parts of the body autosomal recessive osteopetrosis affects, including the bones, nerves, tissues, blood, and immune system. Now, there is one form we haven't discussed yet, called intermediate autosomal osteopetrosis, that can be inherited in actually both an autosomal dominant and an autosomal recessive pattern. To recap, dominant refers to the fact that it only takes one abnormal gene from one parent to possibly inherit the disease. This gives the child a 50% chance of having the condition. Recessive means there has to be two abnormal genes present to manifest symptoms. Because it can be inherited in both ways, the symptoms do vary. You may remember from episode 2 when we talked about the CLCN7 gene. These genes provide instructions for chloride channels. These channels are very important in the transmission and production of electrical signals. These channels help to regulate the pH inside and outside of osteoclastic cells. Now, if these channels are not working optimally, the pH is unbalanced, and therefore the osteoclasts cannot do their job to break down bone. This genetic mutation accounts for 75% of all osteopetrosis cases, and currently all cases of intermediate osteopetrosis are caused by a mutation in this gene. So here we see that is our one and only cause for intermediate osteopetrosis that is known by researchers and scientists. The dominant form of intermediate autosomal osteopetrosis manifests in similar ways as which we have previously mentioned with autosomal dominant osteopetrosis. The signs and symptoms of this condition typically become noticeable in childhood and include an increased risk of bone fracture and anemia. People with this form of the disorder typically do not have life-threatening bone marrow abnormalities. Now, those affected by the recessive inheritance pattern show signs of bone fractures, anemia, osteomyelitis, gradual nerve deterioration, loss of vision, dental abnormalities, thrombocytopenia, pancytopenia, and extramedullary hematopoiesis. These are many effects that we actually previously have talked about in the last episode when we covered the autosomal recessive osteopetrosis forms. However, there are new symptoms that do present in intermediate autosomal osteopetrosis, and these are calcium deposits or calcifications in the brain, intellectual disability, and a form of kidney disease called renal tubular acidosis can also be present. Osteopetrosis with renal tubular acidosis is caused by genetic defects involving mutations of the gene encoding of carbonic anhydrase 2. This deficiency is actually most frequently found in the Middle East and Mediterranean regions. Now, you may be thinking, hold on, wait a minute. What is renal tubular acidosis? Well, renal tubular acidosis is a condition that occurs when the kidneys fail to excrete acid into the urine. This then causes a person's blood to remain way too acidic. If not treated, chronic acidity of the blood leads to growth issues, kidney stones, bone disease, kidney disease, and even total kidney failure. Carbonic anhydrase 2 is one of the most catalytically active carbonic anhydrate isozymes, with the widest distribution being found in the bone, kidney, brain, and erythrocytes, or our red blood cells. It plays a major role in renal regulation of acid-to-base homeostasis and osteoclastic mediating bone resorption. This mutation results in a lack of an acidic environment necessary to remove calcium and absorb bone. Subsequently, A deficiency disrupts this important acid-base balance in the renal tubules, which results in renal tubular acidosis. Deficiency of carbonic anhydrase II also impairs the production of H-positive, or hydrogen, by the osteoclast, which is required for bone resorption processes. Thus, bone resorption is blocked, and subsequently osteopetrosis will be developed. In osteopetrosis with renal tubular acidosis, cerebral calcifications are present, and red blood cells' carbonic anhydrase activity is decreased. Like other autosomal recessive and intermediate patients, bone marrow transplantation can help to cure osteopetrosis. However, this treatment would have no effect on the renal tubular acidosis part of the disease. Maintenance therapy consists of bicarbonate and electrolyte supplementation to correct any renal losses. Infection, kidney failure, and very high levels of calcium in the blood lead to significant high mortality rates, and many people with the intermediate form of osteopetrosis have actually not even lived past the age of 20 years old. Now, there is just one last form of osteopetrosis. It is indeed the most rare form. It has actually only been reported in very few cases in medical history. This is called X-linked osteopetrosis. This is another form of a recessive genetic inheritance pattern. X-linked osteopetrosis is caused by mutations in the IKBKG gene. The IKBKG gene is located on the X chromosome, which is one of the two sex chromosomes. In males who only have one X chromosome, one altered copy of the gene in each cell is sufficient to cause the condition. In females, which have two X chromosomes, a mutation would have to occur in both copies of the gene to cause the disorder. Because it is unlikely that females will have two altered copies of the gene, males do typically become more affected by X-linked recessive disorders. A characteristic of X-linked inheritance is that fathers actually can't pass the X-linked traits to their sons because we receive our X-linked traits from our mothers, meaning the X chromosome that we have comes from our mother. In addition to classical symptoms linked with osteopetrosis, it is also associated with immunodeficiency, local fluid retention and tissue swelling, or lymphedema, as well as abnormalities of the hair, skin, nails, and sweat glands, known as ectodermal dysplasia. Immunodeficiency manifests due to poor inflammatory responses of respiratory infections. For example, this could include pneumonia, which in sufferers of X-linked osteopetrosis, it has shown that they have low pneumonia antibodies even when infection was proven to be concurrent. Since there have been very few recorded cases, there actually is very little conclusive treatment patterns for this form of the disease. The IKBKG gene provides instructions for the IKK protein complex. This is essentially a group of related proteins that binds to DNA and controls the activity of other genes. This gene happens to regulate the body's immune system and inflammatory responses and reactions. This protein also appears to play a role in formation of dermal tissues, including skin, hair, teeth, and sweat glands. It also protects many different cells from undergoing apoptosis or self-destructing. In osteopetrosis, this IKBK gene is impaired, making all these important cell-functioning duties perform slower or absent. Now that we have talked about all the different forms of the disease, despite all the differences in manifestations, genetic ties, and prognosis across the different inheritance patterns, there are similarities that tie all the forms of the disease into one, allowing them all to be diagnosed under osteopetrosis. All sufferers of osteopetrosis are caused by genetic imbalances that negatively affect osteoclasts' function. Fractures and infections are typically due to low white blood cell counts, are the most common manifestations in patients with osteopetrosis. Diagnostic findings are always present in x-rays, blood work, and even genetic testing because they all have an inheritance pattern. Besides hematopoietic stem cell transplantation, there is no cure for any type of osteopetrosis. There are even very few clinical trials listed on the clinicaltrial.government website. After browsing through the trials listed, there were many that were actually terminated for having adverse reactions to different methods of this hematopoietic stem cell transplantation. It shows how they adversely affected the recipients. In one study conducted from September 2007 to May 2008 by the Masonic Cancer Center, University of Minnesota, patients with osteopetrosis enrolled in a study. All patients participating were under the age of 45. Scientists performing the experiment believed the hematopoietic stem cell transplantation would help generate functioning osteoclasts. They hoped that this would correct bone abnormalities, anemia, and bone marrow failure. This study used pre-transplant drugs to make transplants supposedly safer. Unfortunately, the first three patients who received the transplant died by day 100. Now, this study was supposed to be conducted over a period of time, over 5 years. And these patients, unfortunately, lived only up until the first check-in. These patients all suffered from respiratory, thoracic, and mediastinal disorders as an adverse effect. One suffered renal and urinary disorder. One suffered from nervous system disorders, and another suffered from vascular disorders. This study has such vague information due to its termination after the experiment resulted in 100% death of all patients involved. Now, a clinical trial of three people is not much, but actually, after reviewing all of the clinical trials, the sizes are very small. And I think this just has to do with the rarity of the disorder, especially in the more severe forms where this sort of hematopoietic stem cell transplantation would even work. Because like I've said before, this is only proved to be beneficial for people with osteopetrosis, especially autosomal recessive osteopetrosis, that are typically affected by bone marrow abnormalities. So this only leaves such a small pool of people to study. I'm hoping the future will bring more successful outcomes and there will be someday be a cure for all patients suffering from osteopetrosis. This concludes our series on osteopetrosis. I'm confident in saying that over the last 15 weeks, we have gathered tons of information that have showed the anatomy affected by osteopetrosis and also the pathophysiological connections that make this disease affect more than just the bones. It affects so many systems of the body, which proves how everything inside of us works together. And when one's not functioning properly, there has to be another system that is unfortunately facing the repercussions. That's what we've seen here. I really hope you learned something, and I really hope you've enjoyed our discussion on this rare genetic disease of osteopetrosis.